This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 173, Battlefish. Hello, and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, and I'm very happy to be joined today by my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. How you doing on this very hot summer day, Michael?
Why, hello there. I am doing fine. Just fine.
And dandy?
And peachy.
Peachy. That's right. It's peachy, not dandy. Peachy keen. Hey, so we have some fun artificial intelligence stuff to talk about today, and I would like to just dive right into that artificial brain. The first article that I found a little earlier this week is one from The Atlantic, and it was all about Facebook describing something really interesting where they had a couple of chatbots, or they call them dialogue agents, that are really adept at negotiating, talking to one another. And it kind of reminded me a little bit about the Google Homes that were talking to one another that you and I talked about a few weeks ago. And the really interesting element of this bot-to-bot conversation is that these two bots decided to create a new language to be more efficient to speak to one another. And the article goes on by saying, hey, that's really interesting. This is not the singularity, but it's getting close. And isn't this wacky? And who knows what they're really talking about?
Yeah, this was kind of interesting. And as soon as you said dialogue agents, I kept thinking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of dialogue.
Agents of dialogue.
It's interesting because I think what we're getting to is not that they're developing their own languages, right? Because there was an article, about 7 or 8 months ago, kind of the same thing from a Google perspective in translation. But what's really happening is what we've said for some time now in cognitive systems and in machine intelligence, we're going to start seeing things that we don't understand how they got the answer, right? And the best way to describe it is it's doing something we can't interpret, right? Which is language. Language is how we interpret ideas and how we communicate ideas to each other and how we interact. And traditionally, computer systems have been interactions where you would feed in data, you would write the interaction, and you would get out data of some sort. But now we're building systems that are starting to behave more and more like things that understand concepts and ideas and provide insights or theories or recommendations, not just data in, data out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as those systems become more in tune, I guess, with one another and leveraging machine learning and other self-aware is not the right word, but self-teaching methods, they can improve. And in so doing, they can become more efficient in those communications as well. So on the same page, there's another link there that took a screenshot of what the non-human AI language looks like between the two systems. And it goes on a little bit to talk about something called cryptophagia. Was that what I saw? Yeah, cryptophagia. And cryptophagia says it's the phenomenon when twins make up their own secret language, which jumped my brain immediately to something that my wife and her sister, not twins, but they worked on for a while called gibberish. And it is not Pig Latin, but it has some related elements to that. And my kids love that because they're able to speak very quickly to one another, get their meanings across, and it's a secret language to everybody else who hears it.
Well, it's people who understand the context that can understand the language. And again, if we go back to how cognitive systems are being developed and how machine learning occurs, we can understand the initial state of the machine and the programming that we put in place to say, this is how you should start learning. But at a certain point, the learning system, which says, I've gotten this data, I predict some value, I check to see if I get that value, and then I take that check as new input into the things that I learn in order to improve how I predict the next value, that will drift into a set of effective algorithms that may look like, and I love this line, balls have a ball to me, 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 to me, to me, to me, to me, to me, to me, right? Which shows to me. It shows to me that there is significance in the way to me interpret that me to me is important but that could be completely wrong. That to me could be totally worthless in the discussion, right?
But there are elements of that were evident in the conversations between the two Google Homes, if you remember, too.
Yes. Yes. And it was just set up to start by saying, you know, what is on my calendar? Or set a thing on my calendar and invite Google, right? And then the other one went, hey, yes, I'm going to add thing to my calendar and I will invite Google. And the other one said, hey, that's me.
Or what,
to me.
We're at the beginning of something really intriguing here. You know, this is not Eliza, you know, so tell me about how you're feeling, right? This is an entirely different thing.
Why do you feel that way?
I see that you're feeling a way. Why is that?
Yes. Tell me about your mother.
So when you read this article, you immediately went, hey, wait a minute. I've seen this story before, didn't you?
Yes. Yes.
And where did you see this story before? It wasn't with Facebook, was it?
No, it was TechCrunch and Google.
Oh, there you are.
And it was in November of last year. It was like almost the same. Actually, the original reference from the Google study was from September of last year. So it's like, let's repeat this article, but change the players, right? And what it was is translating between different languages where they didn't actually know the languages in between.
Yes.
Right? It started teaching itself how to almost get to that universal translator thought where it started to say, I speak English and you speak Japanese and I speak Korean and you speak Korean, so I can translate English to Japanese via Korean or something
right.
like that.
Well, basically, I can go directly from English to Korean without having an English to Korean translation facility.
Right, because I start, again, understanding to me. And again, this goes back to that basic concept of cognitive systems, right, and machine learning in the fact that we as humans may not understand some of the leaps that it's doing. And it's interesting. I was talking to some people recently about how do you visualize certain data from a cognitive system?
Mm-hmm.
And this is really hard. It's a really hard thing. We can show things that we as humans understand. For example, you know, if the temperature gauge on my power plant hits this value 6 times in a row, you know, process theory says that is an outlier and it's trending as an outlier, so some event should occur. And we know how to consume that type of data by showing a simple graph, right?
Right.
But when you start going into these highly complex systems where you have multiple dozens, hundreds, or even thousands of different types of sensors, and you start understanding the high correlation between subsets and subsystems within that sensor network to predict a machine failure, as an example, how do you show that likelihood without understanding the whole complexity? I mean, do we just end up with red, yellow, green stoplights that say system's good, system's bad, I don't know.
No way.
Yeah, that's not valuable.
You might remember, it's been a long time, but you might remember where we had a data visualization that wasn't visual. It was auditory.
Yes.
And it was, how do I know things are in tune? And if they were in tune, things were okay. If
there was
not
a thing
in tune,
on NPR, and I'll have to find it for the show notes, of a scientist working with a musician to build a symphony based off of data visualization.
Yeah.
I gotta find that because it was really, really interesting. And it's like, this is going to be horrible. You know, they're a musician or a musical theorist. I'm a data scientist. This stuff's going to come together and we're just going to hear, right? It's going to sound like crap. But it actually was really cool.
Anyone who is even the least bit musical cringes when things are not in tune. You know? So this is a way of taking a very complicated set of data and recognizing when something is up, something's wrong. And I really love this when you show this TechCrunch article to me, and you showed the visual that was in it.
Yes.
Right. So the second visual, both visuals are great, but the second visual I liked an awful lot. And I had to really stare at it for a minute or three because it's showing kind of a neural network and saying the translation system's memory when translating a single sentence in several or multiple different directions. And the first thing that kind of grabbed me was, hey, it looks a little bit like genes, you know, like I'm looking at a fingerprint of a small component of a genome. And then the second thing struck me was, it's not that aligned as I think it should be, because the same sentence in Japanese, English, and Korean is expressing the same thought. It's just expressing it in different languages, but it's the same thought. So why wouldn't it be the same? And then I leapt to point three, which is, well, it's doing that because it's having to magnify it significantly to show you where the differences are by the languages and where you start and where you end. It kind of loops in on itself. So what a great way to see and begin to understand how that neural network is operating by the dots on the page.
Yes. I absolutely agree. It's a great way of visualizing that and showing. So very, very cool.
We did talk just now a little about the auditory, and the thing that came across my readers here recently is the Braggi, B-R-A-G-I. And I know we've talked about these particular headsets already a couple of different times. And the new capabilities that are in play for these Dash headphones is that they're also allowing for translations.
Dash Pro.
So the Dash Pro. Yes, the Dash Pro. So you can get these set up so that you can hear and have translated in real time what someone is saying to you. And this is exactly straight out of science fiction, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that says, there you go, that's your babblefish right there.
Yeah. This was fantastic, right? I remember years and years ago talking about Universal Translator and using things like, there was an MQ service like MQ Translate in Second Life that someone had set up, and you would type in English. It would do
cool
English translation to whatever language you chose, and then it would spit out the other language. And then if you added voiceover on both ends, you know, text-to-speech on one and voiceover on the other, you kind of could say something in English, and the other person would hear it in Spanish, as an example. And then iTranslate, if you remember when that first came out, it actually did two really cool things, right? And Google bought iTranslate, if I remember correctly. But iTranslate originally was a camera app on the iPhone that you would hold up to menus or street signs, and it would translate them from one language using OCR to recognize the text, figure out the language of the text, and then translate it into another language. And so once you have, again, text-to-text translation and speech-to-text and text-to-speech on either end, right, you can start doing exactly what Braggy did. And this is so cool. I think they give you a free trial, and then you have to buy the iTranslate service so that you can literally sit there and have these suckers in your ear and have a conversation with somebody, and each of you speak in your native language.
Yeah, I just amazing.
And I was talking to one of our coffee shop people, Stormy, and she has a set of the Braggy Dash, and loves them. I had looked at these originally from when they were doing the Kickstarter, and they were kind of pricey, and I talked myself out of them. And I have my AirPods, which I really, really like. You know, but this is definitely in science fiction space now. This is amazing.
I'm with you. And, you know, the price point's kind of high, but boy, I'm like, this would be awesome.
Yeah,
this would be awesome. And, you know, I didn't read so far into the article, but the piece in the article talking about the mesh network that they're creating.
Yeah.
And the ideas about having other elements around health and quantified self kind of elements to.
Well, that was the thing I really liked about the Braggy when they were first Kickstarter. You could swim in them.
No, but they're working on this thing called the patch.
Yeah, I know. But you could swim in them, and they had in-ear heartbeat monitors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they were a health and fitness device too, as well as noise-canceling earbuds, as well as, you know, they have memory built in, and you can put music on them. So if you're a swimmer, it can get boring sometimes. And you're like just doing lap after lap after lap, and you lose track. And so it'd be kind of cool to like catch up on your favorite podcast while swimming. And then, as you say, they're looking at adding to this because they have to communicate with each other, not just mm-hmm. through the phone in order to keep the sound in sync.
Right.
Just like the AirPods do. And so they already, by definition, are setting up a small mesh network through your head.
Which, in some ways, you're thinking, can that be a good thing?
Yeah, why not? It's your head, not mine.
Yeah. Well, anyway, super, super cool stuff.
Yeah. So the other thing that's really cool about these, if you want to talk about crazy expensive, you can upgrade them to ones that they actually work with a company that makes hearing aids to get custom fit. And then it's only $500 for the AirPods. I mean, the Braggy Dash.
Yeah, well, you know, if you've got problems, you know, with your ears being non-standard ears, I guess.
Right, if you have non-standard ears.
Cheaper than trading in your ears.
which I love the idea, right? I'm sorry, but you can't have the AirPods. You have non-standard ears.
Non-standard.
They're not made out of the finest aluminium.
All right, so We've talked about artificial intelligence. We've talked about audio.
Yes.
And translation services. Now it's time to go to video.
Yeah.
And in...
Well, not just video.
In the video space, right? Not just videos. So our good friend ePredator gave us a retweet here of a Geeky Gadgets article talking about YouTube enabling heat maps for VR and 360 video analytics. So this is super cool, especially as more and more video and 360 degree video is made available. It's able to keep track of where the focus of the viewer happens to be and allow you to take those analytics and ensure that you're getting the maximum possible value out of them. So I loved this particular visual as well to give you that heat map, that hot and cold focus of what are people looking at as they're looking at your videos.
This is the dream of advertisers everywhere, right? Or UX designers. If you can identify where people focus, then that's where you want to put the message you want to get through, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is ideal. And it also allows you to direct focus once you know where people focus. So if you're spending significant amount of time, effort, and money to build a 360 or a VR experience, and do you really need to make a exact duplica of the Mona Lisa the size of a postage stamp if it's over the left-hand shoulder of the viewer when they're looking at 90% of the action for the scene?
Right.
Or can you simplify it, especially if you're dynamically building content on the fly? Right. So now when you think about rendering and you think about,
you can predict, right?
Not only can you predict, but you can also know how fast you need to render the resolution. So think about it from a 360 immersive video
and
game.
And a processing power perspective.
Right. Yes. I need to make the things that are really nearby and focused on have the highest
really
resolution.
Good.
And then I can lower the resolution further out and reduce compute time, reduce power consumption,
data transfer.
Yep. All that stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is, it's not a big surprise. I'm really glad that they're doing this. I hope it's used for good. Otherwise, we'll just have 360 videos that have a straw in the middle that you have to look through the straw, and you see the one point where 95% of all the heat map is.
Exactly. And I've just gone over to the reference link from them as well to take a quick look through there. And it's reminding me that, hey, you know, the NBA finals in virtual reality, you know, that was there too. That was a pretty significant way of watching sports. And that's exactly what they were doing too. I did not do that personally, but we're moving more and more in that direction.
Yes. Very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, Michael, we're almost getting to the end of our time here together. And you had something that I recall that you wanted to share and talk about just a little bit about how you could improve your workflow with gamification.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I saw this in my feed this morning, I think it was. And it was talking about these cybersecurity analysts and how people are using gamification to improve the training of cyber analysts. Now, for those of you who don't work in the cybersecurity field, there's a skills gap in highly qualified cyber analysts to understand and recognize and react to cyber threats. And we see this in business, you see this in government, you see it in the news all the time. And let's face it, the people generating malware and other things are financially incented to do it as quick as possible, as much as possible, in lots of different ways as possible to make as much money as quickly as possible, right? Simple. So about 8 or 9 years ago, Phaedra, our co-host, and myself worked on a project to try to gamify security testing. And I saw this article, and it immediately brought me back to that. But what really got me thinking was, it makes sense to understand what-if scenarios in security to kind of gamify that process to get people up to speed to understand the space quickly. But what other business processes would make sense to do this type of gamification for skills development? And I wanted to kind of throw that out there to our listeners and maybe get some ideas. And Michael, if you had any that you thought of, because this looks interesting to me.
Well, the super easy one is the military aspects, you know, security on a physical level, not just a cyber level. So if you can envision securing a physical environment that could be done in this kind of way, that would make sense. And that would be an interesting way to take advantage of this kind of capabilities. Could be some examples in loss prevention too, where you might say, we're going to have I think the article here says a red team and a blue team. So you would have the blue team looking to protect the mall store location from the red team, who is bent on pilfering some assets, and they have to find a way to try to do that, and the blue team needs to stop them. So something like that, maybe. I don't know. Could be more. I'm interested to know what our listeners are thinking too.
Yeah. The one that I would like to think through, and I'm going to give this to myself as a challenge, is business case development. We really don't think through, and I mean that as an industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the what-if scenarios to address things like scale, as well as to address things like how fast do I need to pivot on a new offering if it's not growing as I predicted when I first put it out there. Because, you know, I spent a couple of years at research recently. Research in any major company tends to have a lot of really bright people with a lot of really good ideas. Mm-hmm. And they say, this is the coolest thing since sliced bread. Everybody will love it. And then it sits there because understanding the right use case isn't found quickly. And then by the time that comes about, sometimes you end up with a situation where there are, you know, 30, 40, 50 other companies already doing it with totally different technology, et cetera. And you're now a follower in the market instead of building a new market. So really understanding how to game through that type thing. Maybe that's a good design thinking exercise. Maybe that's a good exercise from a business school perspective. But those tend to be, 20 years after the fact, going back, if they only thought about using a hard drive inside of a little piece of plastic and playing music from it, they could have made millions.
Yep.
So anyway, take a look at the article. It's from the Security Intelligence blog, and it talks about using gamification in cyber analyst training.
Cute.
Ew.
So as we're wrapping up, you had something in particular that you wanted to share that you're playing with these days.
Yes, we haven't done a "What are you playing lately?" Section. And I was not a big Sega player, right? That game system. I was never really a game system person. I like PC games. But Sega this past week has released some of their classic original console games for both iOS and I believe Android for free. They're calling
Wait a second. What?
What? They're calling it the Sega Forever Collection. And they are free in the sense that you can download them for free and play them for free. It's not freemium. But they do have some interstitial ads as you're going between different levels of the game or different sections of the game. And you can pay a small fee. I think it's like $2 to turn off those ads.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I picked up Sonic the Hedgehog. They have a couple of them, five titles so far. So Sonic, Phantasy Star 2, don't know that one. Comic Zone, I do remember that one in the arcade. Kid Chameleon and Altered Beast. I do remember Altered Beast.
So. Oh, I think I remembered Altered Beast too.
So, and I am horrible on Sonic. And you know what? When I played it in the arcade so many, 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 many years ago.
Yeah. You played it in the arcade?
Horrible. Well, all their games.
Never played Sonic at the arcade.
All their games. I was horrible at all their games. So, something to play, and for our listeners who have the nostalgia itch that they want to scratch, but they're not sure they want to fork out, you know, a lot of money for a console or a emulator, these are the games from Sega on your handheld device for free.
How cool is that? Awesome.
Cool.
Well, I've got one idea to throw into the mix here, and I've not actually done much with this other than download it as yet, but a colleague of mine made a recommendation to me about a yoga app on the App Store called Yoga Studio.
Okay.
And it's supposedly pretty good. He says that he likes to use it after he's traveled somewhere, gets to a hotel room, puts it on his phone or his lap or his iPad, and just lets her rip and kind of stretches out all the kinks and everything that you get from being squished into a teeny tiny little airplane seat for the length of time that we oftentimes are. So I will experience it and I'll let you know how it is.
Very cool.
It's called Yoga Studio.
Well, that sounds really cool and a nice relaxing thing.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, I think that's all we have time for today.
It is.
Some really good links out there today. Some exciting stuff to think about. And we look forward to hearing from you in our feedback section over at the blog. Just comment on the post. Every show that you get in your feed is available on our blog at gamesatwork.biz. Has a comment section where we would love to hear from you. Or hit us up on all the various social media sites that you will see on our website at gamesatwork.biz.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.